Exercise number 23442, rule 6.
You'll say they've made the grade, they've achieved what's necessary, or you fire them. And there was never any compunction, about that, unless you'd gone through that stages. Now, if you recall 1950s, we were leaders in the field, and it did come from America, because they'd started it in the parent company in America, so we used all their knowledge, but we were one of the first companies in the country to have a set method of appraisal down the line.
Which company was that?
General Foods. It's now, it's Maxwell House Coffee, Bird's Custard. It's now part of the Kraft organisation. So it's a big company, but I would not have been so happy working for a British company, which are more formal, than I was working for an American company, where the things are informal, but they're not slack, and you can't get away with things for too long. And there are some people, I mean, when we were recruiting managers, there are certain people, we used to say they're not a General Foods type. What we were saying is that they won't fit in very well with the environment of an American company. And no matter how good they were, how qualified they were, you're wasting their time and your own if you give them a job.
What kind of qualities did they lack?
Well, you've got to be let's go the other way and say what are the things that if you get a civil servant type who's worked within brackets or has worked for another company and over the period of time, you know which are the good companies, where you're accustomed to having your limits defined passing it up. Those don't fit in very well because, yes, you have broad limits defined and you go outside those limits of time. You know when you're going outside them. You know that you're not causing anybody any particular problems when you do go outside them, but you get to the decision stage and get it done. The people who are... There's more of a social atmosphere with an American organisation. You know, the Americans are very affable and our fellow when met, they can stab you in the back too. you need at times to protect your back because some of them can be ruthless. But... you've got to have the sort of individual who's flexible, who's prepared to get on with the job and, you know, when 5 o'clock comes, if it isn't finished, to get on with it and finish it. Those are the sort of people who don't fit into an American-type organisation. Although on the clerical side, they would finish at 5 o'clock normally. Occasionally they'll work overtime, but with a manager... You say you're here to do a job and, you know, if that means working till 6 or 7 o'clock at night, you do it. You don't ask questions, you get on with it. You're doing the job, you get the satisfaction from doing it.
So that's typical of an American organisation.
That's right. And the same thing when I was serving on a tribunal when I was made chairman, I was paid. And I went to my boss and said, look, I'm going to be away about one full day about every 3 or 4 weeks, and I'm going to be paid £130 or whatever it is. I would suggest that I spend that in my own department, but you know, you're paying me a salary. And he said, well, why? I said, well, you're paying me for the time and I'm not here. He said, we don't pay you for the time, we pay you to do the job. You're doing the job, you have a day off every week, well, what the hell, if that's what you need. And, you know, it's that that different approach. He said, if you look at the directors and vice presidents of the company, they've all got other jobs, but it doesn't affect the salary and whatnot. They're there to do a job and you do it, as long as it doesn't affect your work. And, you know, I know it doesn't, then, you know, that's your own money. So, I don't know, it's a more flexible, very much more flexible approach. And we used to have a meeting with personnel people. We set up a meeting with about a dozen of the leading American companies in the country, where the personnel people used to get together and discuss common problems. And quite a lot of those people in the top personnel job in the company, there were certain things they couldn't do without referring back to the States. And that's one of the limitations of British companies, of American companies in the UK. I mean, in our case, if we were revising the pay structure, we'd get all the pay structure agreed with my MD, and then I'd just write to the States and say, this is the pay structure that's taking effect from whatever it is. Because they were concerned in our total budget. They'd say, right, that's what you're going to do, that's your plan for the year, get on with it. What happens inside that is your business. But if you come back and you haven't made that plan, you're in trouble. So it's a different atmosphere, really.
Coming back to the war, did you have any after effects from having served?
Only I had a burst eardrum, and I'm not fully deaf, but the scar, it's scarred and healed now, but it affects the hearing. I should wear a hearing aid, but I don't. But apart from that, I suppose the only other effect that, you know, when you get limb problems, I've had a knee replaced and a hip replaced, and I often think that that's partly due to the fact that you'd get soaking wet and, you know, you just get on with it. But no, I think from what I got out of the war was mainly good. It gave me an opportunity, to supervise people and lead people, and gave me a ground for, gave me the opportunity to get my education level up. And I don't know how I would have got on if I hadn't had my army service.
What, during the war, was your attitude to the enemy, towards the Germans?
Mixture. It was a mixture. The problem people were the young kids of, you know, the Hitler Youth. They were fanatical. You could never trust them. If you got to know German people, we went antagonistic towards them. Now, I think more of the Germans than I do of the French or the Italians. I hope no French or Italians are going to listen to it, but that's it. Because there's always been an animosity between us and the French, and the Italians are not known as good fighters. The Germans were recognised as a good fighting force, and we had a certain amount of respect for them.
You haven't said anything about relations with French, Belgian and Dutch civilians during the war.
Right. Those were generally very good. the French. When we landed in Normandy, it was rather strange in some ways that we expected to be welcomed with open arms as the liberators. We weren't always, and you can understand why. Under the Germans, they had generally looked after the country people. They didn't affect them too much during the war, because they were producing food and the Germans lived off the land to a large extent. And then when we went in, we smashed the houses up and the roads and the communications and knocked hell out of the place. So you can understand that, you know, some antagonism there. I'm sorry, I'm very careful about trusting Frenchmen, and that carried on into business with good, you know, on good grounds. I'm sorry, I don't like the French. I like individuals, but as a nation, I will never buy French wine. You know, after what they did to our sheep, and now why should we? In any event, they don't make the best wine anymore anyway. So I'm biased. Belgians always got on well with them, despite the fact that they let us down in the wars to some extent. The Dutch, wonderful. Never a foot wrong with the Dutch. I've been back over there several times. I still have some friends over there. And they're wonderful. The latter part of the war, when we liberated the area up to the between Arnhem and the German border, because that was left almost right to the end, and they'd, you know, been without food and had a bad time, but they couldn't do enough for us. And well, as I say, we still have friends over there. We go over and visit, and the Dutch people. And I think this is general with service people. They all speak so well of the Dutch.
When you talk about the Belgians letting us down, do you mean 1940?
1940, and they didn't do so well in... No, I was talking of the First World War, really, largely, but again, in 1940. We didn't feel we could depend on them. Having said that, I didn't have any problems with dealing with Belgian people at all. In fact, I've got one or two good Belgian friends from business. I used to spend quite a bit of time in Brussels, and